Welcome to Align Your Practice, an exploration of the seamless relationship between the business of chiropractic and the future of natural healthcare. Join us as we engage with an array of talent, from seasoned experts to passionate new entrepreneurs. Now, here's your host, Dr. Joe Esposito.
Today, we're going to talk about AI and chiropractic. My name is Dr. Joe Esposito. Welcome to the Align Your Practice podcast. I have Gabriel Doty from Chiro HD on with me. How you doing, Gabe?
Doing great. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, so Gabe, it's interesting. Today, I'm having a meeting with a gentleman. I think he was a former CEO of a company. And he goes into companies and you do a reverse demo where you showcase each department of your company, from operations and systems and marketing, and he looks for areas that integrate AI. So I'm going to have that discussion in a couple hours. So I think we share in the same view, is like, well, let's just AI breakfast. Let's AI our workout. Let's just AI everything. That's kind of the mindset. What's your high level thought about
it? Yeah. Such a fascinating topic, and it's one we get in the middle of so often right now. The number of clinics that are reaching out to us, asking us to integrate AI soap notes and AI, you know, everything in there. And so just like everyone else, we've been evaluating it since it really popped up. You know, it's kind of a funny conversation in the tech worlds. You know, for the longest time, what we're calling AI today is really what we've been calling machine learning in the tech space for a long time. And if you know anyone in the tech space, you probably had this conversation. There's been a lot of backlash, back and forth, where developers have been like, for a long time, it's not AI, it's machine learning, it's not AI, it's machine learning, trying to get this idea. And the development community has kind of given up. And so they just said, okay, it's AI. And now we've created new terms for like what developers really want AI to be eventually, which is, you'll hear these things for like AGI or AIG, artificial general intelligence, which is more like what we've always thought of, like, you know, sentient stuff. So it's fascinating, kind of the trends of it. But obviously, over the last year especially, it's exploded. Every company is looking at it and trying to explore it. You've got ChatGPT, and you've got stuff coming out with, like, you know, all the visualizations and photo libraries and stuff. And so I will say this, is that it's been it has been adopted and has been assimilated into so many things faster than I think anyone could have predicted, even in the tech space. So, you know, we're always looking at it. I have some interesting takes on it, though, because, you know, in the tech world, most people assume, because I'm in tech, that I'm like wanting to just embrace this and, yeah, hey, AI, let's do AI everything. And, you know, I think there's just so much, especially in the medical space, there's so much untested and so much unknowns about how this is all going to play out. You've seen there's a lot of EHRs that have already implemented, you know, AI soap notes. They have ways to do this, but we really don't see how that's going to play out with state boards and insurance companies and personal injury cases. Like, I mean, you're going to see a backlash on some of these and say, we don't accept AI generated notes. And then you're going to have offices that are going to have to go back and figure out how to there's going to be a lot playing out over the next 2 to 3 years that we're tentatively just kind of watching and observing and trying to position ourselves to take advantage when we can.
So the only way I can equate that is thinking of, you know, they had self-driving cars for 15 years. Why didn't they just put them on the streets in the 90s? Yep. Right? That's your point, is like, oh, I know they could drive a car on the street, but these police people, and there's like government people that may not want you to not have a person behind the wheel. So it's not, from your perspective, it's not a cynical perspective. It's a cautionary perspective from what I hear. And it sounds like your caution is the regulations, not the power or the value of it. You sound more conservative due to regulations and protecting the doctor, really.
Yeah, I think there's, I think that last point, especially protecting the doctor, right? Like there's also a lot of, I don't want to say it's like incorrect, but there's still a lot of human intervention behind what we think is AI, especially when you're talking about like the medical space. We evaluated a company that does AI generated soap notes, and like, so they do something really cool, which is they record the entire patient experience, and not just your soap notes, but they actually output diagnosis codes, and they connect all these things and recommended charges. And so we looked at this tool, and it's fascinating. And I think it could save a lot of time. But when you start digging into it, it's something when I evaluated it about 3 months ago, something like 50 to 60% of all of what comes back is still touched by a human. So they've got a large offshore, data center where people are taking the data that the AI generates. Someone's looking at it, scrubbing it, modifying and adjusting it because it maybe didn't pick up on an interaction quite correctly. And so then you get into HIPAA and PHI, who's looking at that data? Like, do they have the proper clearances, and do they have all the right protocols in place to even be touching that data? And now you're talking about liability. And that's always, I think that's one of my biggest concerns is we've seen this over and over again in our industry in what we've built and the things that we're building is every time you take a step towards automation, you lose knowledge and responsibility. And that's a concerning thing in the medical space. So like, if, for example, if the AI is generating your diagnosis codes and your charges and your SOAP notes, like at what point do you become responsible for what's in that note and what the diagnosis is and what's actually in there? And so I see a trend of this taking away responsibility from practitioners and really leveraging, you know, AI systems to do their job. And I always think that's a little bit of a scary exchange.
No, I'm with you 100% on that. My perspective is I would want there to be a checkbox or something that says doctor reviewed. I would mind if they post the diagnosis codes, but I want a one quick overview and say I put my license on that data. I think would be healthy because, like you said, but what your point is if someone's looking at the data with this information and they're not following HIPAA regulations, then you're open for lawsuits. For me, any kind of forward thinking in the healthcare space, I want to know what the case law is. And when there's no case law, I get nervous, like, because the judges are looking for case law. Like, well, what happened
before? Yeah. What's happened historically?
Nothing happened. Okay, well, then let's wait for the case law.
There's a lot. I mean, and to your point, it's just like there's so much unknown. And so I think I don't want to sound all doom and gloom on this, because I actually think there's amazing things for AI, and I think there's going to be places where we can incorporate it and should incorporate it and do those things. But for right now, we've kind of taken a stance internally where we use AI for internal training and automation instead of external. So nothing where a clinic or someone is engaging us, like AI chatbots for customer service. We're always going to have a person in there for the foreseeable future. There's too much, we pride ourselves too much on our customer service to hand it off to a chatbot to handle all of that. But we've already leveraged it for, we have a ChatGPT dialogue where we can use it to train our customer service agents to mimic a clinic and to ask questions. And you can tell it to take on certain personalities, you're someone that's chill, you're someone that's just absolutely outraged and frustrated with something. And it's pretty fascinating the amount of things that you can train it to do. And have it engage in like a normal customer service interaction, which I think is amazing. And it improves the real life customer experience, which is much more valuable in my mind than taking away the real life experience. It's like, how do we leverage AI to improve the human interaction, which I think is ultimately the best way that we're going to use AI.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, I we're doing some of that. And we use it for copy as well to refine copy and say, give me 5 alterations of this story. That's kind of nice to leverage that. So there is definitely places to leverage, especially I think in the marketing space, there's a lot of leverage and there's low risk in that stance. I think in yours is probably the last one. It's like law firms, banks, and tech are like medical tech anyway is probably the last one to jump. But what do you see in the future? Do you think it's going to move in all these things that are out there? We're going to get the legislation and there's going to be comfort. I assume it's not going to stop.
I agree. I think that we're past the point of no return, right? I think that we'll only see it get more and more adoption, but I think that you will see regulation around how it's used, especially in
medical space,
in the medical space. Just because again, like to your point, and I'm not calling anyone out, but you know, you're an exception in that world of looking over that and actually reading the note and saying, I put my license on the line on this. I can tell you most people aren't going to do that. They say they see the notes generated, they hit save and we're done. And so like, I think as legislators start looking at those types of things, especially as you are starting to get into diagnoses and, you know, God forbid prescriptions and things like that, you're like, obviously the level of accountability has to be high. And so, but again, I think it can be a useful tool, in this space. And I think you're going to see, a lot of movement there, but I think that there's going to be like a lot of movement and adoption, and then regulation jumps in and like kind of pulls it all back a little bit. And then there's going to be a time where everyone's kind of like, okay, well, how do we use this at the same time? So we're already starting the process of again, using it for ways to help advise versus prescribe, right? I think that if you think about those two different things, it's much more valuable to us to be like, when you save a soap note and the system might be like, hey, your soap note talks about an extremity adjustment, but we don't see a code on there. Did you want to add a code on there? Right. So trying to use it to, instead of like do something for you, is advise you and make you better in your position, or give you, how do I optimize cost and savings? And what's the likelihood that this, the way that this is coded right now is going to get paid by an insurance company, right? So maybe like, even like that, where it's like, hey, based on what this, the way that you've got the your note and your diagnosis codes, we see a 30% chance of this getting paid. You probably need to refine this a little bit. Things like that are very fascinating. And I think that's where the real power of it's going to come in at least our space.
That makes total sense. So more advisement. I like that. Huge. How would that, I don't want to get too technical, but yeah, that's something you guys program, or is this an entity of code? I don't even understand. Like, we were trying to figure out the internet 25 years ago, like, well, where is my dad? Is it on a computer? Like, so yeah. AI, is it one brain, or I don't understand where it comes
from? Yeah, no, that's a great question. And there's a lot of misconception, and it depends on which, what route and what type of AI you're talking about. But obviously the goal, I'm going to use the term machine learning for a second, just because I know that those are, yeah, like, to my earlier point, a little interchangeable. But when you're talking about machine learning, the term itself just gives a little bit better understanding of what's happening. So if you look at, especially when we're looking at like advisement things, what the first thing that you have to do with any AI is create a model. You've probably heard these terms being thrown around, LLMs, large language models and things, yeah, like that. But at its core, it's simply, here's a large data set that we know, we have a clear understanding of what the data set is, right? So it's not like an ambiguous data set. It's, here's data from 10 of our clinics. We know we want to look at appointment trends. Let's use that as an example. We want to try to figure out some appointment trends, but you have a list of data that you're very comfortable with. You understand it. You know what's in it. And you look for a hypothesis. Let's say you're wanting to look at length of time of appointments based on appointment type, something just very similar. You start with it with a hypothesis, and that you know fairly well, or in the insurance world, if we're talking about that, here's a list of claims that were paid, right? So
okay, that makes sense.
So you feed it data set that you know, and then you ask it to look at the data and give you an analysis of it. And it's going to come back and say, hey, here's our analysis of it. Is this correct? And you're going to go through and answer all the questions that it found. Like, hey, we saw this, we saw this, we saw this. And you answer yes, no, or like you feed it human interactive data to not imperfect it, but to improve it. And then you run it again and see. And so you keep doing that until you get to a point where the computer is making the same determination that you already did with your data set, right? So you take a bunch of iterations and you end up with a result set that your model is now aligning with your perspective on things. And so then once you get to that point, you start feeding it another, a larger data set again. So you start with known data. So now you get another data set that's completely different than the first one, but you still know what that data looks like. And so then it's going to come back and be like, oh, well, it's 50% accurate. So you go through that same learning process until your model gets better and better and better. And you keep feeding it larger and larger data sets, and it just starts taking that information. And at some point, it's starting to make connections that you never saw, which is the whole point of doing this, right? And to your exact question, it's starting to make determinations without understanding. Like we're not having like normal programming. You're like, if this code, you know, if denial, then this. If you're like looking at this direct, I'm looking at this and this, and then I'm making a tree of decisions here. With large language models and with machine learning, instead, what you're doing is you're looking at like statistical data, and you're making an abstract determination based on a whole bunch of data points that you're not really telling it exactly what to look for. So in the insurance world, like imagine that where we're not telling it what CPT codes are good or what diagnosis codes are good or what it's just, we're just giving it all the data. Here's everything we built out in the system. Here's all the diagnosis codes. Here's all the payer information about what was rejected, what was denied, what was approved, what was paid, all of these things. And it just comes back and it's like, hey, this combination we've seen statistically that this combination is like 30% of the time it gets paid. And so we can start advising people in a way that's like, we don't have to write those exact rules. We don't have to sit down and be like, oh, no one has to go figure out that combination of coding. It's just that we're feeding it enough data. It has access to enough data where it can make a statistical proximity there.
I'm afraid of getting too analytical. people that are analyticals are going to love this, but I'm going to push this a little further, like to understand it. So machine learning is taking data sets where the actual machine knows concrete data and can make concrete recommendations. So do I understand this right, that maybe AI is where they can step out and build a level of intelligence around it to actually write how to do it or like take a next level? Is AI the intelligence part? Machine learning is they're using these data sets and they're making 30% chance of getting paid. You should use this code. That's just, it's all data, but more refined use of data. And AI is more literally gaining what I would say machine intelligence, or is that off? Or
yeah, I mean, so no, it's very close. I think the line between AI and machine learning are mostly synonymous. The reason that AI has become a bigger term is that as machine learning gets larger and larger and larger and larger data sets, it starts making decisions and looking at data that you never gave it or never trained it on or anything like that. So now it's starting to assimilate other data and look at things in a way that maybe you didn't program it to. So if you look at those data sets, as the data set's small, it's really easy to look at that and understand how it's making decisions and you're helping it. But as it gets larger and larger and larger and has more and more data sources out there, it takes on its own, what we would maybe call intelligence, but it's not, you know, it's just, it has more data and can, and starts looking at things in ways that a person didn't give it a direction on. And so you've seen that in the amount of data points that are necessary for this is astronomical. If you, the CEO of NVIDIA, who is, NVIDIA has been one of the primary, entities behind AI because their processors are so far ahead of everybody else. And so pretty much all AI modeling is built off of NVIDIA's chips. And but he was recently talking about the amount of data points necessary to do some of the video stuff they've released recently. I think it's called Sora, the AI video platform. And I don't want to quote it because I don't remember the exact numbers, but it's like in the billions of trillions of data points that are being used to measure this type of thing. So
wow.
So at that point, and if you look at some of the AI conversations around people like Google, when they first started getting into AI, they made their CEO and all their tech people made multiple comments that they were surprised at some of the things that it did because they never programmed it for that. And they didn't really they built it and they didn't really understand how this happened in the background. There's another fascinating story Google has where they release a machine learning chatbot type situation and someone started talking to it in another language. And within a very short amount of time, within a few cycles, it started engaging in proper language. And they're like, we didn't introduce language models into this. So it's just, but again, once you have a large enough data set, like you, it starts being able to connect dots and putting things together. And so that's where like the intelligence factor comes in here of like, is it intelligent or is it just have access to so much data?
Yeah. Or defining intelligence. What is intelligence? Because if you have enough data, to us, it's intelligence. And they're looking like, back to the chiropractic story, they're looking not only at CPT and diagnosis codes, but they're looking at time of day, amount of characters in your soap notes. They're looking at 8,000 points. We just can't conceive it. So I'm going to interpret it as intelligence. And the computer's like, I'm just looking at 8 million data points.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
But the fascinating thing that I think is going to be the biggest thing for us that we're the most excited about in here is that when you have machine learning in place, like it can pull out connected points that we might not ever think of, right? So, you know, everyone in this space, we've all been in the spot of trying to advise a clinic on how to grow or how to, what's wrong. You've been in a lot of clinics. Tell me what you see when, you know, what's different in mine? Why am I struggling? And, you know, we have our kind of preconceived notions of these are the things that make a clinic successful. And you start getting into some of these potential here, you might be surprised at some of the data it comes back with that maybe aren't things that were on your, even on your perspectives. So you kind of hinted at some of them. Did you know that you make 30% less in the mornings than the afternoon? When your appointment, your average length of appointment is 3 minutes versus 7 minutes, then this happens, right? Like, so you're starting to like look at things that maybe a person isn't going to sit down and see the nuance between these. And it's now able to say, and again, with those things, to connect it back to how this all works, like it's going to come back with these ideas like, hey, we see this trend here that's pretty interesting, that you know, the length of the appointment may be connected to the ability for that practice to see higher volume patients. And then you can refine that and be like, yeah, that's an interesting point. Let's look at that at a larger scale. So you can kind of instruct it to go see if that trend actually persists across everything. And that's where that going back to that interaction process gets in play. Like it'll identify things and you're like, yeah, that's nothing, dismiss it, but these other things are interesting and see if that data model holds true.
It's interesting. I was only thinking compliance, coding, insurance reimbursement. You're talking like in the consulting or practice building side. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
The third one, which is my passion, is proving this profession, which is data mining with machine intelligence on where's the success points with 8 million visits and cases in Cairo. You see, that's our closing thought here is, do you see it in the research? Is that going to be a big play for Cairo HD?
I certainly hope so. So I will say this, and we've talked about this on previous, you know, in-person conversations and even a little bit on our last podcast, is like, it's one thing that we've really tried to do from the beginning is to do everything we can to bring uniformity to the data, I don't want to say no other EHR has done, but especially in the Cairo space, when you have like all these server-based systems, which serve the industry great, but if you look at what happens with those systems is that you turn over configuration to people and you're not asking them to adhere to a set of guidelines to make a unified data set, right? So you've been on this side of it, even like, but you're all using the same system, but they're all server-based systems. And now you're pulling data from all of them and you just spend a massive amount of time trying to align it all together. You know, this clinic put in this thing as a service instead of a inventory item. And now I've got to change this on this data set, or they called it something slightly different. So now I can't put the two together and they don't make sense together. So we've gone to extraordinary lengths and to a lot of pain to try to make it so as we onboard more clinics that their data makes sense with everyone else's data. So that, and at the time we were talking about large scale research, but it's also the same for machine learning. The more uniformity AI has with these things, the better decisioning, the better advising it can make, because it's looking at a data set that's coherent. And so I absolutely think that AI is going to play a piece in research. My suspicion is that it's going to be one of those things that there's going to be a lot of, it's going back to that regulatory thing. What it's going to be best at is giving us ideas of where to look. And then we're going to put real significant research efforts behind it. So it's going to be like, hey, we see this trend and we can see it in the data. Maybe you should look at this, and then we'll put studies around that. And, you know, I think it's going to be a while before AI can release its own study. But
yeah.
It can point us in the right direction and point out some things that maybe we're not looking at.
Yeah, I think it's hard for the average listener or doctor to understand that the clean data and the congruency in data. But that's why we picked ChiroHD as our provider for Align Life. And in closing, I'll just say, just if you haven't looked at ChiroHD, we'd love you to take a look at their software. They are what we've committed our organization to because of all things we just talked about. So you can reach out to, you can go to our site, AlignLifeFranchise.com, if you want information about how we use ChiroHD. And in the Align Life group, if you want information independently, we'd be glad to give you our expertise and insight as to how to best use that their amazing product. So thanks, Gabriel, for your time. Always love talking about the nerdy stuff and understanding the future of technology. So
yeah, thank absolutely. You. Thanks, Dr. Joe. Love being on here and appreciate everything you guys do for us as well.
Thanks, man. Okay. Bye-bye.
This episode was brought to you by Align Life Chiropractic and Natural Health Centers. If you're interested in creating your dream practice or want to know more about Align Life, go to AlignLifePodcast.com.